Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan and I'm joined as always by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Coach, a little rain yesterday, a little stormy. You okay down there in Evansville?
I'll tell you what, Joe, it was a perfect Halloween evening. You had wind, you had dark cloudy skies, you had a little rain, mist. And the bad thing was we didn't get any trick-or-treaters. I know I went across the street with my costume on. I dressed up like Joe of the Coach K and Joe Show, and nobody answered the door. So I don't know. Was it the costume? Was it the weather? Was nobody home? I'm really not sure, but I've watched a lot of scary movies. The Halloween series, of course, the first Halloween is absolutely the best Halloween. Of course, I'm talking about Michael Myers in the first movie with John Carpenter put out, and but I don't understand it, Joe. Do you think it was the costume I had? Do you think it was the Coach K and Joe dressing up as Joe that being candy?
That might have been it. I mean, you know, I don't think I'm very popular in Evansville, you know, and that might be the problem. But I'll tell you what, though, I heard a rumor Scott Schultheis dressed up as Glenn Robinson for Halloween.
I think he dressed up in his pro career uniform. I'm not sure where that pro career was at, but I think that's what he dressed up in, Joe.
Okay. The rumor in Jasper was Glenn Robinson, Purdue 13.
So I'm assuming that trick or treat in most communities after our rain and storminess last night and tornado warnings, and thank goodness, and we thank God that nobody was injured or hurt, and those things never really materialized, at least in our area. I'm assuming that trick-or-treat will take place in communities around Jasper as well as Evansville on Friday night, which it probably going to be less trick-or-treaters because it's football Friday.
Yeah, I know there's been a lot of communities, including Jasper, that went ahead and just postponed it for a day because they ahead of the weather. And thank God we didn't get they were talking some really, really rough weather. And, you know, here in Jasper, we got some rain, we got a little wind, but that was about it. So.
And it's always the stormy weather is great to get through on a Thursday night. Everything's cleared up. Everything's the way it should be. We've got cool, not cold, but cool, crisp weather for tonight. Conditions should be great. And, of course, Indiana High School football playoffs will continue this weekend and second round of the sectional playoffs and the first round for some in the higher classes because there's not that many teams. And that's a discussion all in itself at some point, but will be the second round. But before we get on with the show, Joe, let's touch base on something going on in your household, and that is Coach Liz Milligan and her Jasper Feline volleyball team, or Lady Cats, won their sectional and regional, and this weekend they will play in the first, hopefully, couple rounds of the semi-state.
Yeah, they beat Bossy the other night 3-1, and I'll tell you what, Bossy, you know, they've always got athletes, just seems like in every sport, and that was the same thing in volleyball. I mean, they were pure athleticism. They were right up there with any team in the state. Now, you know, kind of volleyball savviness, you know, a little lacking there, but I'll tell you what, athlete for athlete, so it was a heck of a team, and, you know, they can be proud. I think they might have been one of the first public schools in Evansville to win a sectional.
It's been a while. This year has been dominated for sure by parochial schools and soccer and just about everything else, but it's good to see that. You know, class sports was created to share the wealth, so it's good to see the wealth being shared. And we want to wish Coach Milligan and her Lady Wildcats, good luck in that semi-state against Brownstown Central, and hopefully they'll get into that championship game. Other topics, we've got to at least mention the World Series. Joe, both teams in the World Series, Boston Red Sox, St. Louis Cardinals, they're not our favorite teams. We know that. We've said that for several weeks on the show. Boston did end up winning in six. Waka, 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 waka. Didn't quite have it for the Cardinals in game six. The bats weren't there. But it was a really good series overall. It was exciting. The games were pretty solid other than game six. Joe, the one thing I wanted to mention, and this could irritate a few Cardinal fans, and be sure to call in or text us if it does. As soon as things started to go south for the Cardinals, or east for the Cardinals, I should say, Boston's way, the Cardinal fans who always talk about their loyalty and their commitment, and they love their team no matter what, if you're on social media, and I am, Twitter, Facebook, you name it, it is not one Cardinal fan. It is multiple Cardinal fans complaining, trade this guy, don't re-sign this guy, we won't swing the bats, we can't make a pitch. It was amazing to me. And Joe, you know it even more than I do because you played baseball through high school and you were part of a team that went to state championship. It's not that easy to hit good pitchers. And on the pro level, you got to be able to see the ball. You're guessing a lot of times. You're watching the rotations. These guys are tough. And it's just not that easy to walk out there inning in, pitch in and pitch out, and make a perfect pitch. Obviously, Big Poppy had a great series. I'm not sure if he was a steroid man or not, but I think he was accused at one point. But, of course, MVP. But, Joe, it was amazing to me. The fickleness, and I say it often, fans are fickle, the fickleness of the St. Louis Cardinal fans.
Yeah, it was interesting to see because, you know, they really got on the Dodger fans in the National League Championship Series about how they were acting. And, you know, it was kind of an interesting series. You know, we had the drop ball at second that was never caught, that was called an out, that was reversed, and people were, oh, I've never seen a call first. You know, I got a quick question for you. The interference call was it game three? What did you think about that?
I really thought that, first of all, if you go by the rule, it's the correct call. Does the call need to be made? I don't know. I really don't know. I got questions about that all the way, but it was an interesting series. There were big calls. Isn't it amazing how some of the things that we remember about this World Series, and that doesn't happen often, I don't think, is the calls. Now, there have been some. You know, we've had I think the St. Louis Cardinals have been involved in a few of those World Series where the calls are a little questionable. But it is interesting that some of the things we remember about the series come down to the umpires' calls. And, Joe, how many times have we said when it comes to a great game, you don't want the referee, the officials on the field, or the umpires to decide the game?
Yeah, you want it decided amongst the players. Let the players play, and whatever happens, happens. You're exactly right.
And you know, another case is here's this Boston team. They were horrible last year, questionable for 2 years. Bobby Valentine, of course, came in for a year. Things did not work out well. I think that the whole mix of that team was just dysfunctional. They went out, they hired their pitching coach, John Farrell, and took some of the foundational pieces of the solid Boston Red Sox teams, married them in with some guys that they called were character guys, integrity guys, and a former Cincinnati Reds player, Johnny Gomes, who was part of the Reds resurgent before he was let go. He's out there leading this Red Sox team to their first World Series championship at home in like since 1903 or something like that, 1913. I'm not even sure what it was. But it was an interesting metamorphosis and some of you may have to get your dictionaries out to look that up, a metamorphosis of a club to see them change so much and go on and win a world championship. And I don't think – I love the media for not going back and blaming the people of last year as far as the management and stuff, because this really was a different team other than some pieces. The management of the Red Sox went in and changed the course of this team. It wasn't the same team Bobby Valentine managed. A lot of those guys were gone. It was a new club with some key holdovers, a new attitude, a new manager, and amazingly, the entire curse that has always been placed from the trade of Babe Ruth is gone. They have now won world championships, and they have now clinched the world championship in Boston.
Yep, a sad day. Sad day in my household for the Cardinal freaks, plus the Yankee evil empire fans. You know, it was a sad day. It's always a dark day whenever they win. But you know, Boston also has been through a rough time there with the marathon and all that stuff. And so you know, sometimes you try to forget about stuff like that and be a little happy for some people there that might have helped them heal a little bit. But it's still tough.
They ended an 86-year title drought at home, and I'm happy for both teams. I'll tell you, I met Mike Matheny, the Cardinals manager. I've met him a couple of different times and talked with him via Scott Rolen. And Mike is just a class individual. He's just a good man. He was a good baseball player, smart behind the plate. Very, very disciplined and focused, yet has a great confidence and patience about him. He's a good spiritual person, which is important to me. But overall, he is a good guy, and I hated to see him fall short. But I'll tell you what, you've got to give the St. Louis Cardinal organization credit, from the manager to the general manager to the ownership. The players on the field, they're going to have to do some things next year to keep this going. They're going to have to move some people around and maybe bring some people in, not re-sign some guys and that kind of thing. But this is an organization that's pretty solid. I think it's solid in the dugout. I think it's solid in the front office. And I think it's got some great pieces on the field. And, Joe, even though we're not great Cardinal fans, you got to respect what this organization has been doing really the last 30 years, maybe 40 years. They've just been a tremendous example of an organization that doesn't overspend. They have a pretty large payroll, but they don't overspend. They don't re-sign people to long-term contracts where they can't perform anymore, and they give young, hardworking players the opportunity to get on a major league field and earn their way in. So, just a tremendous end to the World Series. I know Joe's headed off to get our first guest, Jeff Cochran. We're going to talk a little bit of Reds baseball. And the reason we're going to talk Reds baseball is because they've hired a new manager. And they obviously have some areas that have to be filled. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well. A couple other things before we go to that first break and bring Jeff back. Obviously, the NBA is going. And if you've got your favorite NBA team, it's early. Don't panic if they haven't won. I know the Los Angeles Clippers haven't started out the way they'd like, but they'll be okay. They got a lot of young, talented guys that I don't think are very tough mentally. And I think they're hoping that their new coach is going to change all that. And we're going to have to see how that goes. Los Angeles Lakers start out well without Kobe. And interesting note, if you don't know much about Kobe's contract, Kobe, the Black Mamba, got a deposit in his bank account today of $28 million. $28 million. That's a lot of money, folks. That is a lot of money, and it's part of his guaranteed contract and bonus payout, and he's set to make $30 million this year, and $28 million was to be paid up front, and he got that in his bank account. I'm sure it was automatic deposit. And the tax people in Washington will be happy. Maybe they'll be able to pour some more millions of dollars in the Obamacare website. Whether you like Obamacare or not, that's not the point. The website's a disaster. We spent $500 million on that website, and that's ridiculous because there are a lot of businesses, that small businesses, that spend thousands and can get the same, get better results than they got. But the Black Mamba and the Lakers, big payout today, but the NBA is going. Derrick Rose is back for the Bulls. He has been under the microscope since he's been back. The first game against the Heat, they get beat. He plays horribly. And everybody looked and said, well, we weren't looking at whether he hit baskets or those things. We're just looking how he looked on his knee. I'm going to tell you something, folks. I think Derrick Rose is going to be fine, but I am questioning him physically. I have watched highlights and bits and pieces. And I'm telling you, I don't think he's there yet physically. His mechanics don't look good. His movement from left to right don't look what they normally are. Straight on, he's good. But that's not how the game's played. It's a vertical and horizontal game. It's both ways. And I just got a tweet from my contributor in Indianapolis, Don Schulteis, who will be on the show later on during the rant. He says, is Coach K political or sports? Obamacare? Well, let me tell you something. It's in the news. Coach K's going to talk about it. And I said, it doesn't matter whether you're for Obamacare or not. It's just spending that kind of money for a system that doesn't work. But that's why you never want the United States government to be in control of anything where we need it on a daily basis. And health care is one of those things. It probably needs to be fixed, both health care and the website. So the NBA's in action. And I think the Pacers are a team to beat. I don't know if they have enough depth. What are your thoughts on the Pacers? Tweet us or call us here at the Coach K and Joe Show. But I'll tell you, I don't know if the Pacers have enough depth. We've got Hibbert with some – he's already ailing a little bit. We've got to have him in the post. I love Greg Oden with the Miami Heat. I wish he was with the Pacers. But I love the fact that here's this Indiana native – went to high school in Indianapolis, Ohio State, great, went in the NBA, had the curse of being, the big man curse of being drafted by Portland and immediately ends up with an injury, a la Sam Bowie from years ago, the great player that came out of Kentucky. And for 3 years, we haven't seen Greg Oden in the NBA, not seriously in the NBA. And the Miami Heat have given him the opportunity, and the whole point is, to bring Greg Oden along slowly, get him healthy, get him NBA ready, and give them the defensive threat in the post to challenge the Pacers. I'm telling you, folks, that's absolutely what the Heat are doing. They know they need a big man. They don't have a big man. I don't care what you say about Chris Bosh. He's not a big man. He's not an NBA big man. So it's going to be great to see the development of Greg Oden as it goes forward. Excited for the NBA to start. I know it's a long season, but we'll probably talk a little bit NBA a little bit later as well. We're going to go to our first break, and aren't you happy we are? When we come back, we'll talk Reds baseball, their new manager, the holes they need to fill with Jeff Cochran. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by the Coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis, Coach. I didn't play that song just because of our next guest. I played it, though, because I found some old Farm Bureau commercials. And, you know, you remember that's what it was from, right? You did at least watch a Purdue game or two in the day to know that that was a Farm Bureau commercial, right?
Actually, I'd never heard that before, never heard that song before, never heard whoever was belting that out on the tuba. Not very good.
I balanced it out for our next guest, Jeff Cochran, by playing the Cody Zeller endorsement of the Coach K and Joe Show right after that. So I didn't want him to hang up. I wanted to keep him online. So,
well, guys, thanks for having me on. I was too busy wiping the vomit off my mouth after listening to that tuba.
So there you go, Jeff. That's exactly right. With us is Jeff Cochran, and Jeff, you're our Reds contributor, Cincinnati, of course, a lot of listeners in the Midwest and that love the Reds. They love the resurgence of the Reds. They were not real happy with how the season ended up, but I'll tell you what, Jeff, the Reds fans didn't turn on their team near as badly as Cardinal fans did the last couple games of the World Series.
Yeah, it was... like you said, I'm also on social media too, and it was downright violent at times. I got a buddy that once they got down 4-0 in game six, he shut the TV off, and he's a diehard Cardinal fan. So they were pretty upset. You know, the offense that they had year long basically vanished in the World Series, and that's what great pitching does. You know, I think the thing that I've looked at and preparing for today's show is not just looking at Reds baseball, but I know there's a lot of Cardinals fans and Joe included in Jasper. And you know, I wanted to look at what their off season holds. Both teams had great seasons, both along with the Pirates. But the Reds and the Cards both have a great deal of questions going into the off season, which obviously now began at that last out of game six. The free agents period has begun, and you have the whole winter calendar that is now kicked off with the off season of baseball. So both teams do have a lot of questions going into 2014.
And I think there's no doubt about that, Jeff. And that's one of the things that we, you know, when you talk baseball, as soon as the World Series is over, you've got to start talking about next year. And if you want to our listeners, you can text us at 812-480-9449 or call us at 773-897-6325. But let's start with the biggest change for the Reds. It may not be the most important change, Jeff, but it's the biggest change at this point, and that's they hired their new manager. It was from inside, their pitching coach. Is this, hey, if Boston Red Sox can do it and win a World Series, we can do it and win a World Series?
Well, I, like you mentioned, Ken, the whole roster of the Red Sox really turned over. I mean, you had the big deadline deal last year with the Dodgers that unloaded a lot of contracts with the Red Sox. It gave them a lot of flexibility in the offseason. And they did put the right chemistry together. You mentioned Johnny Gomes from a former Red and David Ross, a former Red who really contributed both a great deal in that World Series. The Reds roster is pretty set. There are going to be some changes on that roster, but obviously the naming of Brian Price is the biggest piece of the puzzle. Dusty Baker was a great manager to take a team that that had struggled really throughout the 2000 decade and take them to the postseason. However, as we all know, Dusty's postseason record has not been stellar, and that played true once again in a one-game loss to the Pirates. Brian Price is the pitching coach, very, very smart guy. UC Berkeley, California Berkeley graduate, you know, didn't have a lengthy career in baseball as a player. Probably is most noted for his time as a 26-year-old pitcher playing in the Vermont AA League alongside of up-and-coming center fielder Ken Griffey Jr. And that kind of, you know, started Brian Price's career with the Mariners organization. He was a pitching coach there for a number of years, spent some time with the Diamondbacks, and then came to the Reds 4 years ago. He steps into the manager role now, and that's probably a really good thing. I think as a Reds fan myself, I thought he was the best candidate for the job. He has done wonders with really the development of Homer Bailey and turning him into basically a 1A or a 2 type starting pitcher, and done very well increasing the development with Matt Latos. So I think the naming of Brian Price is the right move, but if Reds fans think that that's the only move the Reds need to make, they're sorely mistaken. There's, like I mentioned, there's a lot of questions for 2014, and first of which comes to the free agent period that we've now entered with the end of the World Series. The two big free
Jeff,
agents that the Reds
you
have
talk
are
about,
Bronson
I mean,
Royal
I agree with you. There is some holes that have to be filled, and I'll just throw out the big one to me. First of all, I think you've mortgaged a lot of your future payroll-wise with Votto, and obviously he's a great player, don't get me wrong, but he's got the Reds have to find a power hitter to protect him and possibly help him get some more pitches that he can drive out of the park, because right now what he's getting paid and what he's producing, I don't see the return there. So let me ask you this. How do they address that need for another power hitter?
Well, and that's a great question, and I think that's one of the biggest questions and biggest needs the Reds have is a right-handed power bat to possibly play left field and really give some protection in the lineup for Votto. There's a lot of speculation that and Joey Votto commented on that himself with an interview with WLW's Lance McAllister last week, that he never felt right physically until about August, coming off two knee surgeries in 2012. If that's the case, then maybe some of the power comes back next year. But Votto's contract is actually pretty team-friendly next year. He's only on the hook for $12 million of that big contract. So it doesn't hurt them payroll-wise as much next year. But they do have, obviously, Shin-Soo Chu is going to be a free agent. He most likely will not be a Red, and the Reds need to determine what they want to do as far as offering a qualifying offer with both Chu and Arroyo, Bronson Arroyo. As far as a power bat on the market, you know, there's not a whole lot free agent-wise that the Reds are going to be able to afford that would slot into a left field position and hit with power. Their best hope is through the trade market, and obviously they do have some pieces that they may not want to trade, but they can trade, and you know, there's been a lot of talk about Brandon Phillips being on the trade market because of some of his outbursts off the field this season. You've also got Homer Bailey, who's entering in his last arbitration year. He's going to get a big raise, and there's some question whether Homer Bailey wants to stay in Cincinnati long term. And if he cannot be extended in this offseason, it would not surprise me to see the Reds dangle Homer Bailey for a left field power hitting type player because frankly he's probably the most marketable of the Reds at this point.
Well, I kind of look at all this you're telling us, and it's great information, great insight, and it begs the question for me: the Reds, if they can't get that power hitter, then they've got to have the strong pitching staff. You can play small ball; it's tough, but you know, I think that a lot of people, when they look, when you get into the playoffs, it's not the home runs that win you the games. They may be the big hit that wins the game, but they don't win you the game. It's pitching, defense, and getting timely hits. So you can play small ball if you've got great pitching. You know, Boston didn't have a tremendous number of power hitters. They had some guys that can put it out of the park, but otherwise, you know, they played great defense. They had great pitching. So if we can't find the power hitter in Cincinnati, Jeff, then the pitching has to stay together. You're talking about guys that who do you keep around? Do you bring that offer back to Arroyo? He gives you a bunch of innings. He's not going to shut teams down, but he's going to keep Cincinnati in the games. You've got Chapman in the bullpen. Is he staying there? You bring him out. What's Price going to do with him? Why was Price great for Latos and Homer Bailey, but he wasn't great for Chapman? I guess I'm going to throw three questions at you real quick. See what you come up
with. Those are all fair questions, and I think decision number one, time-wise, for the Reds is qualifying offers. And the qualifying offer process is basically the collective bargaining agreement now states that if you have a free agent on your team, you have to offer them a qualifying offer. You don't have to offer them, but if you want to try to retain them, you can offer them a qualifying offer at a rate that changes based on the average value of the player. This year, that value is $14.1 million. And the Reds need to decide if they're going to offer that qualifying offer to Bronson Arroyo and also to Shin-Soo Choo. The reason you do offer the qualifying offer, Arroyo thinks he can get a 2-year or a 3-year deal somewhere, and he probably can because he is an innings eater. He's a workout fiend, and he's in great shape. And he's going to give you 200 innings every year, basically. So if Bronson Arroyo is offered the $14.1 million qualifying offer and he declines, then Arroyo becomes a free agent. The team that signs him has to give up their highest non-protected draft pick. So any pick outside the first 10 is not protected. The team that would sign Bronson Arroyo would have to give that pick to the Reds. Obviously, that came into play in this year's postseason with Michael Wacha. He was the pick that the Cardinals got in the draft when they allowed Albert Pujols to go without the qualifying offer. So the fact that you have a chance to get a pretty good player and obviously a guy that provided dividends to the Cardinals right away if they do offer that offer to Bronson Arroyo and he declines it. The other question is Aroldis Chapman. Brian Price in the past has been in favor of moving Chapman to the rotation. He's got 2 years left on his Reds deal. There's probably a pretty good chance he's going to go into spring training as a starter. That has happened the last 3 years he's been with the Reds. And, you know, I think he's better suited to be a starter. I think he's got the pitching capabilities with the fastball, a great changeup and the great slider that gives him the ability to be a lockdown, number 1A type starter in the major leagues. The question at this point is he too far removed from starting? He was a starter for the Cuban national team, and now he's been in the bullpen, and you have to build his arm back up to starting strength. He only pitched about 67 innings last year and obviously did not pitch in the postseason game this year or did not pitch last year a whole lot in the postseason as well. You've got to be in a position to close a game and be winning that game for Aroldis Chapman to pitch, and that's probably not the best use of a pitcher that has his stuff.
Well, Jeff, I'll tell you this. We got a couple minutes left, and I'm going to tie this up real quickly for you, and you're going to be back, and we're going to be talking Reds baseball, and you'll contribute a little bit on the Hoosier basketball team as well. But let me throw this at you, curveball, knuckleball, whatever you want to call it. It's win now for the Reds. You got Chapman. You got Homer Bailey. You got to figure out what to do with Arroyo. You've got a Latos that has resurged and become a strong player, but you've only got him for a little while because when those guys have new contracts coming up, they're going to have to be paid a lot of money. And
no
even
question.
Though the Reds have got their attendance up, they're doing better at the gate, they're getting probably some more TV money, boy, it's going to be tough to fill that gap. A lot of money is going to have to be paid out to keep this team together long term.
And that's probably why Arroyo walks this year. Tony Cingrani was an outstanding pitcher, rookie for the Reds this year. And I think he will slot into a starting role. You also have Robert Stevenson at AAA Louisville that will probably will probably get a late season call up to be a member of the Reds rotation down the stretch in September next year. He was the number one pick in 2010, and I think you'll see him see a little major league time this year. And then you've got a couple guys in the lower minors that will be ready down the road. But the Reds rotation is really six people for five slots. It's Latos, Cueto, Bailey. Cueto, provided he's healthy. Bailey, provided he's not traded. Mike Leake, Tony Cingrani, and Aroldis Chapman. If you keep Arroyo, that makes seven for five, and that's probably not likely.
If you look at – last thing, Jeff, if you look at the biggest weakness that has to be filled – we talked about pitching, we talked about power hitting, those things. If you look at the biggest weakness that must be addressed in this offseason, what would it be?
I think for the Reds, it's got to be a right-handed power bat. I don't see, Ryan Ludwig's 36 years old. I think he'll be 37 at some point during the 2014 season, coming off major shoulder surgery. We all saw what, the shoulder issues did to our friend Scott Rowland, and I think that they're going to have to find somebody that can hit with power, especially in that ballpark where you're playing in 81 games. You got to hit some home runs there. You got to have some protection in the order for Joey Votto. You do have Jay Bruce, and if you want to go two left-handers in a row, a lot of managers don't want to do that. But two left-handers in a row is okay as long as you're not going three or four, and then you can get shut down by a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah, and Jay is a great player, but, boy, he's a streaky guy. He may go cold for a while, and then all of a sudden he's hot again. Another thing about that team, when you look at Votto, can he make it back? Phillips, stay focused on the field, please. But then you've got the Cardinals and the Pirates, and, boy, did the Pirates show that they are legitimate, and even though it may not be long-term, they may be biting at the Reds' butt for the next couple years.
I have a lot of stuff about the Cardinals questions. Obviously, their biggest question is what they do with Carlos Beltran. And I think the Cardinals really need to address shortstop and third base. The Pirates, on the other hand, they have even more questions. They had a couple guys that had career years. They have Francisco Liriano they still have for one more year. They need to talk A.J. Burnett into not retiring and coming back. The Pirates, of the three teams in the Central, may have more questions going into 2014 than the other two. But the Cardinals definitely have some questions, Beltran and shortstop. And the thing the Cardinals have going for them, they've got an awful lot of desirable, tradable pieces. They've got all those young arms. They've got two outstanding prospects, although Colton Wong has not really shown it yet. He is supposedly the second baseman of the future for the Cardinals. They can package a lot of pieces together and go out and get a shortstop. There's not a whole lot on the free agent market as far as shortstops go. It's a very, very weak shortstop free agent market with maybe the best candidate there being Johnny Peralta of the Tigers. But the Cardinals have enough pieces to trade for a guy like Troy Tulowitzki of the Rockies or even Jose Reyes of the Toronto Blue Jays. And I think, Pete Cosma has shown he actually had the third lowest OPS of any major league regular this year. And I think it would not surprise me a bit if the Cards put together a trade or acquire Tulowitzki or Reyes. And David Freese at third base really was a weakness for them this year as well. And you need to question whether he is the answer. I think he's going into his last year of arbitration as well. So you have to figure out what you're going to do with the left side of that infield with the Cardinals. With the Pirates, you've got even more questions as far as their pitching. And a lot of guys that really pitched outside their baseball card and played outside their baseball card this year for the Pirates.
All right, Jeff, real quick, we're going to go to break in just a second, but we've got a caller. Joe, what do we got?
We got a caller. Davey's called in with a comment. Davey, you're on live with the coach.
Hey, how goes it? Yeah, just cruising the internet. I actually have a show myself on Blog Talk, but you know, I wouldn't mind talking a little football if you're up to it, or if you want to stay on baseball, you know, I can do that too. But yeah, the Green Bay Packers are playing the Chicago Bears. I don't know what it seems like nationally, and I don't know where are you guys located.
Well, Davey, we're down in the southern part of Indiana. And we're going to be talking football a little bit later in the show. If you want to hold on, we can get back to you.
Oh, all right, sure.
All right, we're going to go to break. Thanks, Jeff Cochran, for everything on the Reds and the Cardinals and the Pirates, and we're going to have more to talk about throughout the season. When we come back, we'll be talking a little high school football with Chris Goodman. You're listening to Coach K and Joe Show.
Thanks, guys.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com. Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back, and I love that commercial. I love that clean lady. I love her rendition of Indiana. Man, I would like to hang out with her and just listen to her talk about the Hoosiers and sing that song a few times. And talking about a guy that I love to hang out with, we got Chris Goodman on the line. We're going to be talking some high school football playoffs in the state of Indiana, specifically the southern part involving SIAC teams. Chris, how are we doing on this Friday morning?
I'm doing good. How about you? I think everybody survived the storms last night, and I think tonight's a double whammy. We got trick-or-treating than football, right? Is that not the way it kind of plays out?
It really is that way. It's football and candy and trick-or-treating. And I know I read on Facebook that Chris Goodman was on a diet. What a dumb time of the year to go on a diet.
It's pretty dumb. I agree. Last week I was thinking about it, and I actually tried to play basketball yesterday, and I am so sore. I'm too old to be playing basketball anymore, and played with some guys that actually, and you'll laugh at me for this, but they're in their 70s, and they won the senior gold medal in Cleveland this year, and I got a chance to play with them at the Y in Evansville, and those guys run me around in circles. I tell you what, I'm not in good shape, but even when I'm in good shape, I can't hang with those guys.
Well, next time you need another person around under 70, under 60 anyway, give me a text and I'll be happy to run the floor with you. I think I know a few of those guys, not real personally, but I know of them, and maybe we'll talk to them sometime on the show. That's pretty interesting that they're still hooping it at that age and hooping it very well. Chris, let's talk playoff football in Indiana. First game I'm going to throw at you because it matters to Joe a little bit, and it matters to me and to our listeners. Let's talk Central at Jasper.
Yeah, and you know, when I look at the stats from this, and I was just looking at Central stats on Max Preps and Avion Sullivan, 223 carries, 2,046 yards this year, 27 touchdowns. It's kind of mind-boggling. But then the quarterback, Austin Fuchs, has also run for 1,000 yards, 14 touchdowns, and he's a very efficient passer. So I think Central is loaded on offense. I don't think we've seen a team in Evansville that has put up this amount of points. I don't know how the record books stack up or what it looks like, but I'm guessing that the Central run this year with the amount of points they put it up certainly is probably one of the best performances this year. I know Jasper's very good. I've had the chance to see them against Boonville this year, so I think it'll be a good contest, and I think the big question is whether the Jasper defense can slow down this prolific Central offense.
Yeah, and Chris, you know, the thing about Central, and we've talked about this all year, is here's this prolific offense, and truly it is. The numbers you just threw out are just amazing at any level when you think about it. But this team is just a tale of two teams. That defensive side, you just don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, and that's one thing that, you know, is kind of mind-boggling that this team puts up a lot of points, but I think when you're putting up that many points and you're scoring, you're putting their defense on the field so many times that maybe they're getting a little bit tired, maybe they're giving up a little more points, but like you said, if you think you have those athletes that you can do that much on offense, you think that would translate into at least a decent defense with all that team speed, but it certainly hasn't for Central this year. That's their weak point. That's probably the point that Jasper wants to grind it out and take away some of that offensive firepower by, you know, running clock and clock management. And that's kind of what I expect tonight. Whether that happens, we'll see. I don't think Central's certainly going to put up 77 like they did last week, but I think they're fully capable of being in the 30s, and Jasper's going to have to score that amount of points. So I'm guessing that game's going to be somewhere in the 30 to 23 range or something like that.
Yeah, we know Jasper has a solid offense. Nolan Aaron's a quarterback, can throw the ball and pass the ball. And run the ball. He did have some issues throwing the ball a little bit against Harrison, but it didn't make for a real big difference on the scoreboard. Jasper's a little banged up. They're missing one of their fullbacks. I'm not making excuses for them. These are the facts. But they are a good offensive team. They are a solid defensive team, although they have, against the better teams, given up some points. The one thing that I think plays to Jasper's favor, and I don't know how big a favor it is at Jasper, which is a natural dirt field, and Central's used to playing on the turf. Makes them a little quicker.
I agree with that, and I think that in years past when Jasper's hosted those games and they've hosted a 4A team and played a fast team from Evansville, that's translated usually into a Jasper win. I mean, not every year, but obviously on the good teams that Jasper has, and this is one of those teams that you think is very capable. I think the one telling point, you look back and you look at the schedule and you look at how they played Mount Carmel. Mount Carmel was able to put up four touchdowns, I guess, and Jasper didn't score that much. So I think that's probably, if Central is looking at a way to beat Jasper, I think they got to go to the videotape and got to look at that and see what Mount Carmel did that was so successful to slow down Jasper that otherwise scores, you know, in the 30-point range just about every night.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You got to hit the tapes to see where that's at. It's going to be a good matchup to – well, a very, very athletic team in Central and just a strong, disciplined, good team in Jasper. Of course, two quarterbacks with over 1,000-yard passing. Nolan Aarons is the all-time passing leader in a season at Jasper now, and a great running back. I mean, you're talking 2,000 yards. That's pretty impressive. Another big game, I think, because we're going to find out just where Castle has come from the beginning of the season till now. They take on 7-2 Terre Haute North, and North just kicked them all over the field at Lucas Oil Stadium early in the year. What do you see in this game?
You know, Terre Haute North played a tough schedule, first of all. They beat Castle, like you said, 44-14 in that first game. Terre Haute North only lost two times. They lost to their county rival, Terre Haute South, who's 2-7. They lost to Southport, a 6A team, 11-10 in double overtime, and Southport is 10-0 in Class 6A. So they played a lot of 6A teams. In fact, they played four of them They beat three of them, lost in overtime to another one. So they manhandled Columbus North. They beat Perry Meridian. So I think strength of schedule certainly plays a factor into this one. I think Castle has lost to some teams they probably don't usually lose to in the past here. They lost to Bossy. Not to take anything away from Bossy, but when you're comparing Bossy to a Terre Haute North club, I think it's certainly, you know, a different level that Terre Haute North's capable of playing on a night-in and night-out basis. So I think Castle's going to struggle. I think Terre Haute North's going to win. I don't think it'll be the 44-14 mark that it was last time, but I still think North will win by a couple of touchdowns.
Let's jump back to 3A, sectional 32. We've got Princeton at Bossy. Bossy really surprised me, or Pike Central surprised me, one or the other. I don't know how that Pike Central was in a position to win that game. I'm not sure what happened with Bossy. We're talking about a team so athletic against a team like Pike Central who really wasn't, and the difference in schedules should have made this game a laugher. Bossy survives and moves on. That's what you want to do in the playoffs, but you got any concern with that, Chris?
Yeah, I think if you go and play Pike Central and you don't win by a couple of touchdowns, it's certainly, you know, in a year when Pike Central's having a little bit better of a year than they've had in the past, but and they picked up some wins this year, at least one. I think that says a lot about the mindset of Bossy heading into that game. Probably they overlooked a team like Pike Central, and certainly maybe that's just, you know, one of those things that's a warning and to the team, and they know that. And Andre Thomas tells them, look, if you don't come prepared to play, anybody can beat you. And that's particularly true on the high school level, I think, when you're playing high school kids and who have a lot of distractions, a lot of things in their minds. I think a lot of teams are capable of beating other teams on a given night. You certainly wouldn't think that Pike would knock off Bossy, so that score kind of makes you think that Princeton might have a little more of an opportunity. They've got a great running back. I think Deion Hardeman is kind of all-world for Princeton, you know, given the opportunity to carry the ball. I think he can score, you know, quite a few points and get just a ton of yards, and I think he's probably a college-level prospect. But I think Bossy ultimately wins that game.
I would think that Bossy would. I would hope the wake-up call's there. I don't think Bossy has the numbers of skilled players of size that they can afford to have anybody take the night off. Princeton will beat them if they do that again. Hopefully that Pike Central was a wake-up. I got to give some accolades to Princeton. They've won all the games. In my opinion, they've won all the games this year that they should have won. They're a good team. They didn't win any of the games that really were questioned, but they had a good record and a solid progression for that program. The other big game in 3A, and it is a big game, Gibson Southern 10-0. People think they may be the best in that class. I don't know. You know, once you get up around Indianapolis and north, it changes a lot. But this is a team under Coach Hart that some different players filled in some roles this year and have done even more than did last year. And this is a Memorial team at 3-7. If you don't come to play defensively, they can score. Both quarterbacks have over 1,000 yards passing. They got some good running backs. I think the key for Gibson Southern here, and I could be wrong, is they're big up front on both sides.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what the factor was last year, even though Gibson Southern won in overtime 27-24, and that was just a tremendous game, and a lot of people expected Gibson Southern to roll in that one. And you know, but you look at this series, you look back over the past 8 years, and it's actually 2-2, and I was doing some research this morning trying to think, you know, who's going to win this game, because on paper it looks like so much better. Or actually, on paper, it looks like a terrible game. But then you factor in the fact that Memorial's played a tough schedule. You look at like scores. Memorial beats Heritage Hills 34-14. Gibson Southern beats them 50-26. So kind of the difference was about the same. Gibson Southern hasn't played a lot of close games. In fact, their only close game was a 10-point win over South Ridge. So I think the one thing that I think about this game is the fact that Gibson Southern hasn't played a lot of close games. This may be one of the games where they actually have to fight down, you know, tooth and nail to the end of the game. Whether that makes a difference, we'll see, you know, if Memorial is still close. But I think it's going to be close, and I think it's going to be one of those tests for Nick Hart and his team that if they can win this and survive, I think it'll do them a lot of good in the playoffs on down the road. But the big question is whether they can win it and survive, because Memorial is a lot better than that 3-7 record.
I have to agree totally with you, and I know last week we were a little bit different on how we thought things would go with Memorial and Heritage Hills. I just didn't have any questions about Memorial going up there and handling Heritage Hills. But I really am wondering about this game. Part of me is leaning towards Memorial winning this game because they have had a tougher schedule and played a lot of those teams closely. I think one of the things for Memorial in looking at their past games, not against Gibson Southern, but throughout this season, Memorial needs to get off to a good start. They've had a few games against the better teams where they've given up a lot of points early, and it's just made it tough to come back. Although they did get a win in one of them, they've fallen short in several others. I think they got to get off to a good start. Let's look at 2A. Modern Day, undefeated, Mike Gable's team, tougher nails, both sides of the ball, take on a Sullivan team that's 7-3.
Yeah, I think Sullivan is a lot better than probably what people anticipate. You know, down here in the southern Indiana where we don't get to see him as much, set up near Terre Haute, they beat Vincent's Lincoln 30-27 last week. I think they kind of peaked. They won at South Spencer 48-21, and I got a chance to see the Rebels, and I thought they were pretty tough. Sullivan also beat Owen Valley, a 4A team. So, you know, but Modern Day, on the other hand, has done that and more. They're undefeated. They beat a lot of the good teams. Their defense is phenomenal. I don't see Sullivan by any means scoring 40 points against Modern Day. I think they'll be lucky if they get in the teens because that Modern Day defense is awesome. Then they got to worry about slowing down a Modern Day offense that's just put up a ton of points. Chase Haynes done a wonderful job at quarterback for them this year. Nolan Gable, if he's back and healthy, he'll be back. And they got Logan McCann. They got several other different running backs they can throw at you. But the big thing about Modern Day is that offensive and defensive line, and I've said it a couple of times, I think, on this show, but Adrian Butler and Logan Nicholson on the corners, I mean, they do just such an amazing job on defense and offense creating holes. Butler on offense will line up a tight end and catch balls. I mean, they have so many different weapons and so many different ways to attack you that I think Sullivan, no matter how much videotape you watch, you're going to have a hard time preparing for Modern Day.
Yeah, and again, if you have a text or question or a comment, text us at 812-480-9449. Chris, you look at the rest of that sectional 40, North Posey 4-6, at a very, very good but fortunate Southridge team who Tell City was ready for them in Tell City and honestly was in a position to win that game on a two-point conversion. What a gutsy call by the coaching staff. And they're going to score and win that game, and they get a penalty, but Southridge survives. That's all you have to do at tournament time. 8-2, they'll host North Posey.
Yeah, I think Southridge needed an easier game after that because when you have that kind of a heart attack situation, you know, down to the end when you're going for a two-point conversion. And I can't imagine being a coach and being in that situation and seeing it happen not once but twice, and then your team somehow survives and moves on. But, you know, that's kind of what it is. I think Tell City peaked towards the end of the season. I think they were getting better and better. I think it's a sign of things to come for them in the years to come. I think they'll be much, much better. But I think Southridge will cruise against North Posey tonight. I think they'll win that game rather handily. North Posey's younger. I think eventually they're going to be back to kind of where they are with Rinkiewicz, but they're going to probably have a couple of down years here before they rebuild.
And I'm not going to leave Panther Nation out. I'm not going to get the West Side up in arms with us. And for our listeners outside of this area, Wright's High School on the West Side, great football tradition, and boy, they let you know it. The Panthers 7-3, a team that has continually improved and steadied the ship under their new coach, versus Silver Creek 4-6 at the Wright's Bowl. Thoughts on that quickly?
You know, I've figured out that Wright's goes through Malik Higgins. You know, he's a running back, he's a wide receiver, he's a punt returner, he's a kickoff returner. I think he's one of the best athletes. He's just a junior in the state of Indiana, and I think that team, once they found out that they need to get that kid the ball, he has been unbelievable. If you look at his stats, he's got great stats as a wide receiver, as a running back, and the games I've seen him play has been just tremendous. I think Wright's wins that game at Silver Creek. Silver Creek's 4-6. They beat Boonville 49-41, and I think the Panthers win that and move on and await the winner of Jasper Central.
Yeah, and that sectional championship in sectional 24 should be a good one on the 4A level. Before I let you go, Chris Goodman, I'm going to switch gears on you. I'm going to switch gears on you, and we're going to go to basketball quickly. USI, under Coach Watson, went up and played IU in an exhibition game. I thought they represented themselves and their conference very, very well. They were competitive. They had some kids that stepped up and played great ball. They pushed IU to have to play some good, solid basketball. And in those exhibition games, the better team just wants to come out healthy and push themselves to the next gear. One of the local television stations did a little expose of Coach Watson on the sidelines during that game. I was just very impressed with USI and Coach Watson, how they represented themselves up at Assembly Hall.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me at all. You know, Coach Watson's a guy that's known as the Dean of Assistant Coaches in the MVC for his years as an assistant over at Southern Illinois University, you know, with the Salukis, and really surprised that he didn't get that head coaching job, you know, several times, because you see what a class act he is and what he does for this team, and he's recruiting the right way and really taking all the steps it needs to, you know, for that program to kind of flourish and get back on schedule and rebuild without, you know, doing anything that is beyond the NCAA rules. I mean, obviously they had those violations and things that happened that set that program back a little bit. So I think it's one of those situations where you got a guy who has come in, who's turned this program around, done things the right way. He deserves a job on the Division I level, not to say or take anything away from that Division II job, but obviously that's, you know, kind of what people want. But I think the world of him. The times I've had to interview him and sit down in his office, and when we were doing USI games back for Channel 25 a couple of years ago, and he was nothing but first class to me. And I think, and I'm a little bit biased, I've always been in the media, but I think the way coaches and players sometimes handle the media just kind of shows you how classy of an act they are, and I think he's one of those guys.
Well, Chris, you know, we've got the basketballs bouncing in the background while the football is being thrown in the foreground, but what's Chris Goodman got going for high school basketball? Are you guys going to be doing some games of the week?
I think it's going to be more like January, and that's my intuition speaking, not anything official. That's kind of what we did last year because it's so scattered. The schedules are not always on a Tuesday, Friday like they are, you know, early in the season. It usually waits till January before you get to the conference season, before you get on a Tuesday, Friday schedule. And I think once that happens, I think we'll probably do some games for Local 7. I don't have anything official to say that, but that's my gut feeling.
Well, we look. Either way, we're going to have you back. We're going to be talking high school hoops and probably some Aces in USI basketball as well. Again, if you're looking for personal lines insurance, small business, give Chris a call. He's located out in Newburgh. Chris, as always, you do a great job, and you bring a lot to the show.
Hey, man, great having me on here. Hopefully I'm still on that diet by next week. I don't know if I will be or not. You know, you never know. I got Dr. Pepper's calling me, so, you know, they're in my brain, implanted in my brain, that and cake and candy. I mean, it's too much this time of year. I don't know how anybody ever does it.
Well, I'm going to send you a care package from the Coach K and Joe Show full of diet chocolate candy bars.
Okay. Hey, that works for me.
You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? Well, team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
But you saw what happened the last time he had it. He has a tendency to mishandle the ball every now and then. Now Kentucky's only going to put Lamb at the free throw line and nobody on the line. So they don't care whether he makes it or misses it. They're not going to have any problem getting back on defense. Lamb eyes the shot. It is good. It rattled it in and then came back out and then went back in. 19 for him. Here comes Rennell Jones. 3 seconds, 2 seconds, Riddell all the way outside to Watford, 3 on the way. Oh! It went in! It went in! And Indiana wins the ball game! Christian Watford with a 3! And the Hoosiers have knocked off the number one ranked Kentucky Wildcats! Unbelievable!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Tonight's the night we'll make history.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe, joined by the coach, Coach K. Ken Schulteis, coach back in 1981. Were Janet Bartley and Ken Schulteis listening to this song?
We probably were. And we were probably thinking of making history on the basketball court with the sectional championship as teams play in the Indiana playoffs this weekend, trying to get to that point where they can play for a sectional football championship next week.
Well, you know, with our huge budget, we jetted you up to the Big Ten media day yesterday, and you got some you taped some really good interviews for us that we'd like to play, didn't you?
Yeah, we're going to be listening to Coach Crean and Coach Painter during the Big Ten media day up in Chicago. And we're going to listen to Coach Crean, and then we'll talk a little bit about Indiana basketball, and then we'll delve into Purdue basketball by listening to Coach Painter. Both teams have had an exhibition game. Both have had victories. Purdue's was a little closer. They played, I believe, the University of Indianapolis and did come out 80-75. Of course, they're missing the big man, Joe. He's suspended for a little while. Not sure what all happened there. Any knowledge of what happened with the big guy at Purdue?
Only thing I heard, it was team rules, and I did hear, and there's speculation, maybe he missed a meeting or something. You know, he had that problem last year, and, you know, he's too important to the team to be doing anything like that, if that's what it was. That's just speculation from Golden Black Illustrated's message board, so, but I don't know. But I'll tell you what, we've got Coach Crean up first. You ready to take a listen to what he had to say about the Hurrying Hoosiers?
Yeah, let's get ready to do that. One thing, Joe, about your intro back into the show from that timeout, Don Fisher was absolutely wonderful. Of course, he's been a guest on the Coach K and Joe Show. We got to get him back on.
Yeah, we do. He's you know you're good when even Purdue people like you. You know, if you think Purdue and IU rivalry is a pretty high heated thing, but the one thing I can honestly say I've never heard a Purdue person say is one ill word towards Don Fisher. He's a Mr. Class. He truly is.
Yeah, class individual. We're going to go listen to Coach Crean right now. And one thing to note, they did pick up another recruit, James Blackman. Of course, he had agreed to be a Hoosier a couple years ago, decommitted. We'll be talking about that later in the show, but he is going to be with the Hoosiers. So let's listen to Coach Crean on Media Day about the Indiana Hoosiers.
Our final head coach this morning is Indiana head coach Tom Crean. Crean enters his sixth year with the Hoosiers and returns seven letter winners from last year's team that won the outright Big Ten regular season championship and advanced to the Sweet 16. Coach, welcome. We'll start with an opening statement and then take time for questions at the end.
All right. Well, we're excited for the season. I think the early start of practice has been phenomenal. I would think for everybody, but especially for a team that's as new as we are, because all of a sudden, after losing four guys that scored over 1,100 points, along with Illinois, we're one of the two youngest teams in this league, experience-wise. So we've had a lot to learn. We have a lot to learn. I think the biggest thing we're trying to get accomplished right now is to get our team to understand, this team to understand what it takes to practice at a championship level, and showing the standards of last year. Not necessarily who it was, but how it was done, I think is the most important thing. For us right now, we're trying to get ourselves to a point where we have a consistent level of leadership, and guys understand that leadership is nurturing, but it's also demanding, and to understand what that takes. And then just getting a young team to really absorb how important it is to be as fundamentally sound as they can be, to be as technique-driven and detail-oriented as they can be, and the more that you can get them to understand what causes you to lose, and more games are lost than won in so many different ways, and to get them to understand that even without game experience, to try to put them in as many situations as we can in practice, to have referees probably anywhere 75-80% of the time, more so than we ever have, to help them learn, but also to get ready for the new rules. But it's been a great group to coach because they have a humbleness. There's a real total want to, and it's just going to take a while to get to the whole how to, and that's what we're going to be in the midst of trying to get accomplished. But love coaching our team. I love what Will Sheehy and Yogi Ferrell are trying to provide for us on the sense of on the floor and the sense of the way they're trying to help make it even more competitive, the way they're trying to lead. Love the addition of Evan Gordon and the knowledge that he has of the game. And it's a thrill to try to stretch his game to get him to go above and beyond where he thinks he can be. And then all the guys that are freshmen and sophomores right now that are going to play considerable roles for us. So we are proud of what we've done. We've got the culture moving in the right direction when it comes to work ethic and when it comes to character, and now we just got to understand how hard and tough and competitive you have to be on a daily basis.
Thanks, Coach. Let's go fourth row on the left.
Coach, I guess just can you measure yet how much more you've gained because you've had the longer preseason with this young team than maybe you would have a year ago, 2 years ago?
No, I don't think there's any way to gauge it because it's so different. I think because the timing of it is so different. But again, yesterday's a great example. I mean, we're doing situation work, what we do with a couple seconds on the clock, side out, couple seconds full court, couple seconds underneath, and just completely speaking a foreign language. I mean, completely. And that was something last year. We won the championship because we understood how to play situation basketball. We were down at Michigan State. 4 with a minute and a half to go. We were down 5 with 50-some seconds to go at Michigan. We win both of those games because our guys understood situation basketball so well. So the answer is no time is enough. I mean, it's great to have this kind of time with them. We're going to need every bit of it. And at the same time, you have to balance when they need to freshen up, when they need to get a little time off, when they need to be pushed a little harder, and how you balance it throughout a long season.
So middle third row. Jeff RavdownSpeaks.com. Tom, can you just talk a little bit about how special Noah Vonleh could become if he develops as possibly expected throughout the year?
Well, he's got a special work ethic, and he's got a special humility. And sometimes the word sponge can be used, and it's really just a lot of hyperbole. You know, when it comes to somebody that really wants to learn the game and get better, not with him. He is high level and wanting to get better. And for somebody with that kind of talent level and that kind of ability, I mean, it's fun to watch. I mean, he really understands that there's things that he doesn't know, but he wants to get them, and he wants to get them that day. And the work ethic for an 18-year-old, just 2 months into his 18-year-old birthday, is amazing. So as he continues to get comfortable with the ball, away from the basket, and at the basket, you know, when double teams start to come, when he understands the all the different awarenesses that come defensively, whether you're on the ball, whether you're off the ball, he already knows how to rebound at a high level. The biggest thing he's got to get he's got to get more demanding of the ball. He's got to be, he and Cody have a similarity. Neither one of them would just step out and really demand it with their body at times and with their voice at other times. And that's something that Noah's got to develop. He really does. Because and it's not just the skill set of scoring. It's the skill set of being able to drive. It's the skill set of being able to pass. It's the skill set of being able to facilitate for others. And I think when you can do that, you can take your game to another height. So when he gets that, you'll start to see him really take off.
So along the right-hand side.
Hey, Tom, Pete DePremio, the Four-Way News Sentinel. I know it's very early, but thoughts on how you see the Big Ten shaping up?
Well, I haven't given it a lot of thought other than, I mean, I'm sure the predictions seem right. I haven't really looked at any of the teams as much. I follow a little bit of the box scores. So I really don't have a great thought on that.
So left-hand side, fourth row.
Tom, Bob Kravitz, Indianapolis Star. What sorts of progress have you seen from Yogi Ferrell this summer and the first couple of weeks of practice?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that the way the season ended at Syracuse and the way that they played him, especially off ball screens in the zone, has helped propel him to making points in the sense of he's going to become a better shooter off the dribble. He's going to become a better shooter off the catch. He's going to become even better off the ball screen. His shooting has improved tremendously. There's been nobody that has come in that gets paid to evaluate that hasn't made a comment about his improvement, and especially on the offensive side. He's got to understand that his greatness is going to come this year from what kind of leadership he provides on a consistent basis when it's not comfortable or convenient. Can he get to the basket at a high level, especially with the way these rules are? And that was something that he's really started to do a better job of in the last week in practice, but it's got to carry over into the games. I think the other night, shooting two free throws and two defensive rebounds, those would be very abnormal for where he's going to be during the season. Making six threes, I'm not sure if that's he's shooting the ball at a high level. He's our most consistent and highest percentage three-point shooter in practice. But the leadership part of it, the demands of his teammates, the ability to be more communicative on the court, on both ends of the court, and then being able to get to the foul line and being able to get defensive boards. When our break starts with him, where he's actually the one with the ball rather than getting it in an outlet, the numbers are staggering from a year ago. And I think it's got to be the same type of thing. But there's not one aspect of his game that I wouldn't say is not improved.
Time for one final question on the left.
Coach, how did Stan's knee react to playing in the scrimmage last week? How has he kind of come along since then, and what did you like from what you saw from him?
Well, I think he learned a little bit about the difference between being hurt and being injured. And when you're injured, that's a whole other situation. And when you're hurt, sometimes you just got to be able to deal with it a little bit and play through it. And I think he's learned a little bit about that. He came back and has had a couple of very solid practices, one where the time that he's missed of being on the court has affected him some, in his wind and conditioning, but not in his game. And right away, he's back to being a guy that gets to the foul line, that can get to the basket, and still too quiet, still too much locked into his man rather than being locked into the help defense. Still doesn't know all the offensive things that we're doing yet, but he's been a pretty quick learner. But I think the thing that he's come back in there and has just played like he's not favoring anything at all and really trying to play with a pretty strong reckless abandon, which is important.
All right. Thank you, Coach. Good luck.
All right.
Thank you.
And we're back after that interview on Media Day up in Chicago with Coach Tom Crean of the Indiana Hoosiers. I think the theme coming through his press conference to me on Media Day is that this Hoosier team, which most of us already realize it, is young and there's just a lot of question marks. We,
yep.
When I say we, Hoosier fans, are counting on Yogi Ferrell to lead this team and Will Sheehy to lead this team. Yogi Ferrell is, if you stretch him, 6 foot, if you stretch him. In fact, Joe would probably measure him 6 foot, but you had to see Joe in math. He's probably as bad as me. And Will Sheehy, 6'7", shoot first, think about passing next time I'm on the court. These are question marks that we really need to get answered. I don't know that the USI game answered a lot of those questions, although they did show that Yogi was aggressive in looking for a shot. And that he was going to take that three-point shot. And I think defensively you have to decide. You're going to give up the three, or are you going to force him to drive? Because you know if he drives, he's going up against the bigs, and he's going to have to kick it out. So you have to challenge your defense to play accordingly, which I think most good coaches and good teams can do. Lot of positive things about Vonley, 6'10", but he's a freshman. And so we're going to have to see once he starts going up, and the preseason schedule for Indiana just isn't very good. I know a lot of people get mad at Coach K because he's not a big fan of this preseason schedule, but I think Indiana's preseason schedule the last few years has been more than disappointing. I cannot stand when people make excuses and say, well, this team isn't quite as good and they have to put a preseason schedule together that affords them that. No, put a preseason schedule together that forces them to compete at a higher level. Coach Green talked about guys learning how to practice at a championship level. Well, I think the same thing is true in your preseason basketball schedule. Yes, you want to win. Absolutely. And you don't want injuries. But if you're talking about getting a young team ready to compete in practice at a championship level or play in the Big Ten at a championship level, then you better have a good preseason schedule, because the quickness and the strength and the athletic skill, that changes tremendously, especially the physical play, once you get into the Big Ten. So, Joe, when I listen to Coach Green in the press conference, he's pretty much preparing fans for a young, inexperienced team. I don't like how he is creating his little buffer zone there. I think this is a team that program that wins national championships, competes for Big Ten championships, and we've recruited these guys, and we need to get them ready to play at a Big Ten championship level. We need to be the Michigan States. We need to be reloading. The Ohio States, we need to be reloading. And I think there's some good talent here. Whether it's mature enough, whether we have leadership on the floor, remains to be seen. But I will say this, Joe. I think that Yogi Ferrell is the kind of guy that can lead this team. I think he's smart. I think he's tough. Size is only a detriment if we have to just rely on Yogi Ferrell.
Yeah, I mean, listening to it, you're exactly right. It was kind of tempering some of the expectations you read on message boards down a little bit. And, it'll be interesting to see this year, how the kids that are sophomores other than Yogi progress, because, that was a very highly touted class coming in. And, even though a lot of people thought they would be superstars last year, I was smart enough to realize that they really didn't need them last year. They could have used them a little bit to contribute a little bit more, but, they are freshmen, and this is the Big Ten. This is big boys basketball,
And they have to play bigger than the moment. The moment can't be bigger than them. And that's why you have a team. You have individuals who come together, and as one, they become bigger than the moment that they're in. And it's time for Hannah Perea. It's time for Jeremy Hollowell to be that. I don't know where Peter Jerkin is in all this. It's been quiet. It's important for these guys, the sophomores. We're talking a lot about the freshmen in this media interview. We got to have these sophomores from this vaunted recruiting class. They've got to play better than their YouTube videos, and that's my line now from social media, because people go on to YouTube and they look at these guys' videos in high school and AAU. Folks, let me tell you something. There is a PR guy or a mom or a dad or someone sitting there taking this video, and they're only showing you the highlights of their play. And if you've ever been to an AAU tournament, it's great competition, but it's almost an unspoken, we're going to let the guy make the move. If the guy makes a strong move to the hoop, we're not going to try to defend it. We're just going to let him finish it, get the ball out of bounds, and go the other way and do the same thing. And so I think this is a solid team that can develop through the year, and I think Coach Green and his staff will get that done. But these guys got to now play bigger than the moment. The moment can't be bigger than them.
Yep, you're right.
Well, next up, we're going to listen to Coach Painter. I think he's an excellent coach. I think they struggle on the talent side. Joe, I know you have your thoughts on that. Before we go in to listen to this media press conference with Purdue, is this a team that can take a step forward this year before we listen to Coach Painter talk, or do you really have questions about whether they can be any better than last year?
You know, they went a youth movement last year, and those kids are a year older, and some of the freshmen they brought in, I mean, Bryce and Scott actually started, I don't know if we can read much into that, over Ronnie Johnson in the exhibition game the other night, and Kendall Stevens, a freshman, he was lights out from three. You know, that was one thing they really struggled with last year. Everyone could pack it in, you know, on Hammonds because there just was no outside shooter. And with him and Sterling Carter, the guy, he's a fifth-year senior from the University of Seattle. That's got 1 year to play. He can shoot as well. So they've got some shooters. But then also at the four, I mean, they've got Eric Peck, who transferred from Cornell, a Cathedral graduate. I'm sure Don Schulteis can tell us a little bit more about him, as I'm sure he's seen him play quite a bit when he was in high school. But then also, you know, Basil Smotherman, he's competing for time. Coach Painter's already said, you know, the three seniors or the three freshmen are competing to start. They're not happy to be on the team. They're all three competing to be in that starting lineup. So we'll see how it goes as the year goes on.
Well, as we get ready to listen to this interview with Purdue coach Matt Painter, there's no doubt about it. This is a very young basketball team at Purdue, just like Indiana. And if you take Hammonds off the floor, there's not a lot of size. If you're listening to the show, you can text us with any comments or questions at 812-480-9449. Even if you listen on podcast, because obviously the show's available 24 hours a day, and you have any comments or questions, go ahead and text them to us, and we'll pick them up on the next Friday show. We're going to take a few minutes. We're going to listen to Coach Matt Painter at the Big Ten Purdue Media Day press conference.
Next up is Purdue head coach Matt Painter. Painter enters his ninth season with the Boilermakers and returns four starters from last year's team. Coach, welcome. If you'd like to go ahead and start with an opening statement, we'll then open it up for questions.
Thank you. Obviously really excited, like all the coaches, for the start of a new year. We had a very young team last year, still have a lot of freshmen and sophomores this year, but with more experience. He talked about returning four starters, and I really don't know who our starters are going to be. I think it's a good thing for us. We have more depth. We have more experience. We have nobody in our junior class, so we have four seniors, two guys that have been with us for 4 years, then we have two fifth-year guys that hopefully can bring us some stability and some experience, some maturity, you know, to balance out the youth that we have on our team. But after having a tough non-conference last year, I thought we battled to be able to tie at 8-10 in the best conference in America after going to six straight NCAA tournaments. But we had struggled so much in non-conference, at such a tough non-conference, that we just put ourselves in a bad position. So hoping to have more consistency earlier in the season this year and just simply play better. So, like I said, I'm excited for this team. I'm excited for our pieces. Now we're just going to have to put it together and be a good team.
Thanks, Coach. Let's go ahead and open it up to questions. Let's go on the left.
What's up, Bob Kravitz, Indianapolis Star. Matt, last year you talked about some of the lack of commitment from your guys about getting into the gym and working hard. Has that changed, and if so, how has it changed?
Yeah, I think the younger guys, the guys that started, Ronnie Johnson, Rafael Davis, A.J. Hammonds, all of those guys have had a better summer. They know what to expect. Tyrone Johnson and Travis Carroll have done a good job being, you know, leaders and being in the gym and being 12-month guys. We've had freshmen come in from day one and worked very hard, and they continue to spend a lot of time in the gym. And I think that's something that happens a lot, is when you have more time in the summer, you do put that extra time in and that extra effort. But then once school starts and you get a full academic load, you start with conditioning, you start with weights, you start with individual workouts, now do you put in that kind of time? And since the start of school, we've been able to see that with guys coming in after study table, guys coming in at night, Some guys come in earlier in the morning, and I think you can see it in some of our numbers in shooting, in practices and in some scrimmages. You know, guys are being more consistent from the line. Guys are being more consistent from three. I did feel that, you know, our struggles last year to shoot the basketball, you know, lied in our skill level at times, but also in our decision-making. You know, you have to be able to understand what a good shot is for you, and that might be different from one of your teammates. And kind of sometimes when ego, clashes with reality, it's hard for a guy to pass up a shot, you know, so Purdue can get a better shot a little bit later in the shot clock. So there's a part of working on your game. There's a part of understanding who you are and just having discipline and taking a good shot.
Let's go all the way in the back left.
Hi, Coach. Jerry Palm, CBS. You talked about the guys making more of a commitment in the offseason to doing the work that needs to be done. But A.J. Hammonds is going to start the year with a three-game suspension. Mm-hmm. Is this a concern for Purdue fans long-term that he still hasn't got the right attitude?
Well, I don't know if it's an attitude. Obviously, he stubbed his toe, and he's going to have to pay for that. That question's really for him, not me. If you don't understand, you're asking me. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, what happens in our business when you deal with young people is you get a lot of lip service. They learn to say the right things, you know. Well, will they do the right things? And I think that's the – I know I'm not answering your question, but it doesn't lie, you know, with me. You know, he's got to be able to now show action. It's like leadership. You know, whenever there's some disciplinary action, you know, now when you got to make your next step, you know, leadership's action. Everybody says the right things in a huddle, you know, but you go out and do the right things as a leader, and that's the best example. Anytime there's disciplinary action, you know, now can you learn from it and now be able to, you know, to go out there and be consistent, you know, on and off the court.
Let's go on the right side.
Hey, Matt, Pete DiPrimio, Fort Wayne News Sentinel. And I know it's very early, but the thoughts on the Big Ten, how you see it shaping up?
Well, I think we obviously had a great year last year as a league. How it gets shaped from a national level, there's a couple different factors, I think, that goes into it. They always want to take a snapshot how we're doing the ACC Big Ten Challenge. You take your overall non-conference slate, which, you know, 95 to 98% of that will be complete around Christmas time. There'll still be a couple lingering games for a couple schools. And then you see where you are. With the moving parts with, like, Syracuse and Pitt and Notre Dame going into the ACC, you know, you're talking about a league that you've had to battle before in terms of what's the best league in the country. That's now different. Obviously, the Big East is different. And so it's very difficult, but we have some really talented teams in our league. Michigan State, has a lot of guys back, a lot of experience. Michigan has a lot of guys back. Ohio State, I think, has a potential to be one of the best defensive teams in the country. I like the way they can put pressure on the ball and be versatile, with Kraft and Shannon Scott and Lindzel Smith and Sam Thompson. They have very, very good players, but those guys all can guard. And then Wisconsin's always, you know, right there. I'm going to leave out a couple teams probably, but I always try to stay traditional. If you look at 10 years, 12 years, and you run that data with the guys that are in our league, especially those coaches that have been here forever. So I think those guys will be at the heat, but it's also one of those deals where I think we have a lot of teams. We could get, you know, 7-8 teams, you know, possibly in the NCAA tournament, and that's what you're striving to do. You're striving to get as many teams in as you can.
Time for two more questions on the right here in the middle. Tom Oates, Wisconsin State Journal. Matt, there's a lot of good defensive teams in this league, as you know, including your own. Are the new rules going to penalize the good defensive teams, teams that hang their hat on that?
I think it's, and in theory, with talking with them, it's something they feel they're going to stay with. So if you're telling me the way the games are going to be called in exhibition games are going to be the way they call them in the Big Ten, and we're going to have a lot of good players watching basketball. I don't think that will sit with people in this room. I don't think it's going to sit with coaches and players across the country. It's definitely not going to sit with fans. I think there's a different way to increase scoring if that's what they're trying to do. The only thing I do as a coach is take what, you know, our officials coordinator tells us and adjust. And then within the course of a game, try to get your players to adjust. So, you know, we're trying to be better in terms of position defense and keeping the ball in front of us without using our hands. But it'll be interesting to see what happens here if the way the games are getting called in exhibition games or the way they're going to be called in non-conference, then the reaction from everybody.
Go, last question on the left.
Coach, Sean Morrison, Journal-Gazette. You had Bryson starting last night in the exhibition game, then also Kendall and Basil obviously contributing quite a bit.
Right.
Have you been at all surprised by how much these freshmen have been able to challenge the returners and work themselves into the rotations?
Not really. They've all three came in with great attitudes. They've all three played very hard. You know, Basil Smotherman and Kendall Stevens, you know, they could have started for us last night. They didn't. But they're in the mix in terms of, you know, the conversation. I think that competition, that depth is really going to help us. You know, Ronnie Johnson is our best quintessential point guard in terms of doing the things necessary to be a good point guard. Tyrone Johnson, I felt, deserved to start more than any other player that we had on our team. But with that being said, Bryson Scott led in competitive drills in practice. We accumulated 50 different competitive drills through our practices, and he had the best win-loss percentage in those. And so I told our guys, and I told him, and I told Ronnie that the last time I checked, we get gauged on winning. And I just felt that, you know, he had earned that spot through his consistent, you know, kind of competitive nature through practice. And so he reminds me a lot of Chris Kramer from that respect in terms of just how hard he plays and how he competes every day.
All right. Thank you, Coach. Good
Thank
luck
you.
To you.
And that was Coach Matt Painter on Media Day, Big Ten Media Day up in Chicago. We heard first from Tom Crean, next from Matt Painter. Coach Painter sound very subdued, and I think that he realizes that they went through a tough, they just had a tough year last year. They couldn't shoot the ball. They couldn't score. And although they defended as strongly as they could through most of the year, towards the end, the lack of success on the court, on the scoreboard, inability to score, put way too much pressure on their defense, and the weaknesses in their athletic talent started to show up, I think. I thought it was interesting how he talked about the recommitment of his players, although they should be committed the minute they come in, or they shouldn't be there. And I love how he talked about the question on A.J. Hammonds, suspended right now for several games. The question, he said, the question would be better asked to him. And I think as coaches, we sometimes get criticized for coming down on a player or disciplining a player. It looks like we're being a hard ass, that we're being too tough, that we're not with the times, although you get what you tolerate. I totally believe that. I don't care if it's 1900 or 2000 or today, you get what you tolerate. People give you what you expect and what you tolerate. But I thought it was interesting that A.J. Hammonds, he is the guy that has to decide to answer that question, whether he deserves to be out on that floor playing. And there's no doubt about it. He's one of the best big men in the Big Ten. If he improves the way he should have, as he improved last year during the season, he's going to be tough to contend with. And when he's on the floor, Purdue's a much better team, a much bigger team, a much stronger team. When you have a defensive presence like that in the middle, it makes a big difference. But not if your head's not screwed on straight. Joe, when you listen to Coach Painter, very humble, didn't make excuses. That's one thing I like about Coach Painter. Doesn't make excuses. But you could hear reservation in his voice.
Well, I think it, last year, you know, I guess he didn't realize the kids weren't in the gym doing it, what they needed to do in the off season, and I think he's going to take a show-me approach, you know. You're going to have to prove to me, you know, what's going on. I think I think he likes this year's team. He likes some of the shooters that they've added, you know. But, you know, the one thing that he's going to do is he's not going to get too hyped. You know, he's not actually the type of guy that's going to get too hyped. And, you know, I think in both interviews we listened to, I heard guarded optimism. You know, they're not going to
sit
there and say,
that,
you know, how
no
great that the team is, but they're going to, you know, they're just going to take a wait and see approach and see, you know, Coach Crean and Coach Painter are just going to make their team prove to them just how good they are, you know. So I think
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Kind of
both teams, IU opens up or goes back to the court with the exhibition game versus Hillsdale on November 4th in Bloomington, and Purdue plays on the same date. They'll play Wayne State. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to go to the mailbag and see what we've got. I know I got a question here from someone, so we'll see what we're going to talk about. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Next up is Purdue head coach Matt Painter.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family, cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
There's the windup. Here's a pitch. It's a slow curve low, and the Babe swings. It's a long one going out toward right center. Stengler's backing up against the wall. He can't get it. It's in there.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
It's not the U.S. Postal mailbag. It's not the Joe mailbag. It's the Coach K mailbag.
New York and New Jersey love Coach K. Go Hoosiers! Coach K speaks the truth! Woo!
Now here is Coach K and Joe with this week's Coach K's Mailbag.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show with this week's edition of the Coach K's Mailbag. And we're going to jump right in, Coach. This is from John Botsmagic Bodorf from Jasper. He wants to know... Who deserves the whole – oh, okay, wait, let me – I got ahead here. The DH put this matter to rest. Who deserves the Hall of Fame more if they include a DH, Edgar Martinez or Big Poppy?
Wow, great question, Bots. Very insightful guy, isn't he? Great competitor,
yes,
on the great competitor on the basketball court, just a good guy all around. You know, that's a great question. I think Edgar Martinez came through, did a great job as a DH with Seattle for years. The question of steroids never came up with Edgar, but one might question that if that was the case. Big Poppy has done a tremendous job in Boston. I think the question of steroids has come up with Big Poppy in the past. Three World Series championships for Big Poppy. I don't know if I can put anything to rest because the debate will always be there, but I got to tell you, based on what I'm looking at, three World Series championships, taking this team, turning it around this year, and he did. He's a big part of the leadership in Boston, and the way he played in clutch situations. Although, Joe, actually, up to this point, you know, he had some holes in big games, but I'd say it would have to be Big Poppy. Sorry if that isn't the answer you want, but that's Coach K's truth.
Okay, this is from Jim and Lagodi. Do you feel like message boards can sometimes hurt recruiting? It didn't seem to hurt with the James Blackman decommitment, with him recommitting, even though people on Teagues were not talking well about him for the last month.
I think that I don't know if it hurts or helps. I think it's changed the game. I think that message boards, social media, has changed it for the fan, has changed it for the recruiting and the player itself. I'm going to throw something out that might be controversial. I don't know that James Blackman didn't get a break that IU took him back. He decommitted. Did he decommit to test the waters? Did he think some red carpets or big blue carpets were going to be rolled out for him that maybe didn't get rolled out for him? Did he want to do what some of the guys are doing now and, hey, I'm going to decommit. I'm going to end up going to IU anyway, but I want to do the big signing ESPN stuff, social media stuff, where everybody's hinging on who I'm going to pick. So I'm just going to throw that out there. I'm wondering if James Blackman Jr., and he's not his father, believe me, he's a good player. I'm not so sure IU didn't do him a favor by taking him back.
Okay. You did you say you had a question for us as well?
From Tony in Henderson, Kentucky. So we've got somebody in Kentucky. I had a couple questions from Henderson over the past. And he is an Indiana native, but he lives in Henderson. He says, when does high school basketball practice start in Indiana? And I think the answer to that, Joe, and you can correct me or our listeners can correct me, I think it's November 11th. I think basketball practice in the state of Indiana for high school starts on November 11th. As I said on a past show, it used to be October 1st if you were a non-football playing team. And, man, I think we were playing a game by October 14th or 15th. But now it's November 11th. And I think a lot of that was based on the other sports on the high school that have expanded. Also, college has pushed things back, but now college has come the other way. So, Joe, unless you know a different date, I think it's November 11th.
November 11th is when it is. Coach, I'll tell you what, let's take a break, and we'll go get on with the rant as soon as we get back. How's that sound?
Hey, you go to break, and you listeners, come on back, because we're going to have Kurt Gook say, we're going to rant a little bit, and this could get a little heated. I hope Don Schulteis calls in, because we might get a little
He's
heated
ready.
On a couple of topics. Let's go to break.
He's ready. Okay.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're ready for the rant. And we're joined by Kurt Gooksell, Sports Director, WBDC, and our Indianapolis correspondent, Don Schulteis. Guys, you ready for the rant?
Hey, Joe.
Absolutely. Well, guys, I'm going to get you started right here, and I'm going to start with Kurt. Kurt, James Blackman Jr. goes ahead and commits to IU. Big thing on ESPN 2 or 3 or 5 or 7 or 9, whatever it was.
Yeah.
2 or 3 years after committing to IU earlier during the creening period. I'm going to tell you what I think, and I know you guys may disagree. Let's go at it. Doesn't bother me. I think IU did him a favor. I don't think James Blackman had near the people beating down his door that everybody thought he did, and this stuff that, oh, he's going to Kentucky, he's Kentucky all the way. Maybe Kentucky didn't roll out that big blue carpet the way they thought he would.
Hey, that's an interesting point, because I was just going to say it did surprise me, because we went on the show last week and said that it was probably Kentucky and a done deal, and I just couldn't wait after I found out he committed to IU to this weekend find out the real backstory but you may be on to something, Coach.
Don, your thoughts?
I think that here's my thoughts. I heard that another shooting guard committed to Kentucky earlier yesterday. As late as Wednesday night, I was getting tweets and feedback that Blackman was going to go to Kentucky. Then yesterday morning, or late morning, early afternoon, the other shooting guard commits to Kentucky, and then all of a sudden the tweets and everything changed to Blackman is going to go to IU. And I think if you read the tea leaves, that maybe somebody came in at the last minute and Coach Cal pulled the rug out and said, hey, we're full, we got our shooting guard, or he saw limited playing time for next year and decided to placate the Indiana fans by announcing that he couldn't let the Indiana fans down by not playing for them. So,
and let the Indiana fans down. I know that that's the mea culpa to get back in the good
game. Well, he wants to be Mr. Basketball Coach. He wants to be Mr. Basketball.
I think
basketball.
It plays right to my point. Right to my point that maybe he didn't have the people beating down his door that he thought. If another guy gets the nod over him at Kentucky, well, then he wasn't number one on Kentucky's radar screen. And maybe there's a reason.
God, he was ranked number 23 by the pundits, Coach.
Well,
like
there's
you.
A lot of pundits that told me Hannah Mosquet Perea or whatever was going to come into IU and change the game.
Yeah, Coach,
yeah.
Weren't
you one of
them? You made about the Hoosiers and these sophomores. All of a sudden, last year as freshmen, we heard about Perea and we heard about Jerkin. And this year, Coach Crean, and nobody talks about those guys. Or, you know, we're already over the scholarship limit for this year. I think we had two slots, right, Kurt? And we have three commits, and we might have four or five commits. Are some of these guys on their way out?
Well, that's just the way the ball globe turns in Bloomington. You know, stay tuned. But, you know, even with Blackman, you know, I said this last year about the guys that they brought in this year. Until they show up, until they sign next week, who knows, James Blackman may change his mind. And then he gets on, you know, like, gets on ESPN last night like the rest of these clowns. Just show up at your college and sign a letter and play. You know, I mean, I get so tired of it. I know that the recruiting and everybody, you know, people hire these people to follow recruiting. I was much more excited last Saturday night watching the guys that Indiana had or the guys that Louisville had the other night or Kentucky had the other night that are actually there. You know, maybe I missed the boat on getting all crazy about this recruiting stuff, but I just enjoy the team once it's all assembled.
And I'm with you, Kurt. I thought it was interesting during Media Day, Coach Crean in the press conference, which we played or aired earlier, he says, you know, he talks about the guys who are paid to come in and evaluate. Well, maybe the problem is that these guys are paid to come in and evaluate because maybe they're just trying to play to the media and play to the fans. I mean, some of these guys look great on YouTube, Don, but YouTube isn't the game. YouTube isn't the up and downs and the half-court possessions and the defensive possessions. And I still believe that IU's going to have a solid team. But you're right, Don. In that media conference, there was not much time spent on discussing those sophomores. Other than Yogi Ferrell and a couple comments about Vonley, we're not talking about some of these players who were just vaunted as one of the top recruiting classes in the country.
I think, read between the lines with Coach Crean's comments, I think it's going to be a long preseason and there's going to be a lot of development going on. And it makes sense. I mean, you've got a bunch of underclassmen. You've lost almost 80% of your scoring and rebounding and, you know, leadership and all of that kind of stuff. And so it's going to be a long process. And you're right, you know, getting back to or over to Purdue, Coach Painter, you know, he was impressive, his comments about A.J. Hammonds and what he needs to do. These kids need to start – well, really, these men need to start stepping up and taking accountability and responsibility for whatever his actions were that got him in the hot water, and hopefully he'll do that. It's just refreshing to hear the coach say, you know what, it's on him now, and it's time for him to step up.
Kurt, have we gotten too soft in disciplinary roles, in leadership roles, and we listen to too many people tell us, oh, you got to change with the times? Isn't the bottom line, you get what you tolerate? Human nature, it's been around for hundreds of thousands of years. You get what you tolerate.
Well, of course. I mean, of course we're getting soft. We canceled Halloween in every city in the state last night on a forecast. No, I mean, come on. The softness that we have allowed to go on, and I agree with Donnie. It sounds good where Painter gets up there and talks about, and he's right where he's saying it's time for guys to step up. But Matt Painter's just like everybody else. When he needs A.J. Hammond to play, just like when Rick Pitino needs Shane Bohannon to play, they're going to be playing because that's what coaches do. But I agree with you, Coach. You've got to teach these guys. There's got to be some toughness. There's got to be some accountability, and there's got to be a way of doing things. And at the end of the day, that stuff still works. I don't care if you're in school, in a job, in basketball, football, it still works. And the people that understand that on both sides, whether it be the player, the student, the worker, or the boss or the coach or whatever. When they both understand that, we're all better for it.
In the end, it's not the coach that takes something away from the player. It's the player that forfeits the right to what was his. And you talk about talk or walking the walk. And a guy said to me the other day, if you coached again, you think you'd be too tough? And I said, I don't know. I've coached some 6th and 7th graders here lately. Nobody quit yet or ended up in the hospital. I think in the end, we people are giving us what we tolerate. And if we ask for their best, if we give them some expectation and make them responsible, it's like Coach Painter said, these are questions A.J. Hammonds needs to answer because it's up to him.
No, there's no doubt. I just think that, and he's been down this road before. How many times can a guy like Matt Painter rely on somebody like that? How can their team rely on guys like that? But, until one of these guys says you're done, the player's still going to take that rope and use it. They're going to do what they can get away with. But, it's up to – and then, I guess I'm kind of disagreeing with there. Then it's back on the coach or back on the school to do something about it. So,
real quickly on IU, Don, and then I want to jump over to the Miami Dolphins for Kurt Guksel. Is the evolution of Yogi Ferrell's game, is it going to be too much on a sophomore that's barely 6 foot? I think if you stretch him, he gets about 5'11 and a half. Is it going to be too much to ask him to be the leader, the scorer, the penetrator, the assist? Is it going to be too much on that young man this year for the Hoosiers?
The short answer is yes. I mean, I think that he will need to be the leader. He's the point guard, but he can't do it all. I mean, he's a talented player, but his size, I think, limits him to some degree. And the fact that you don't have other options, the defense can take him and focus on him and shut him down in ways that last year, if you tried to isolate one of the players, double down on him or whatever, cheat on help side defense. Other players were there to knock it down and make you pay for it. But until IU, other teammates of his step up and show that they can handle the next level, I think if we're putting all our eggs in Yogi's basket, I think we're going to end up getting a boo-boo.
Hey, Kurt, let's jump over real quick. The Miami Dolphins were on a losing streak. They come out with a win last night, or did the Bengals lose the game? I throw it at you, a lot of questions. Did Miami win the game, or the Bengals just throw it away or not throw it away, which they should have thought?
I think 25% Miami won it because they did some things pretty good that they haven't been doing lately. But the Bengals committed 4 turnovers. They got a little aggressive late in the game when they probably, and that goes both ways. If they're not aggressive at the end of regulation, and they don't try to take a chance to win the game, then their fans are going, well, we played too conservative. Last night it came back to bite them when they threw the interception. The Dolphins had to then move down the field, so it's not, you know, all on the Bengals. But the Bengals, they went back to being the Bengals. They made too many turnovers and let the Dolphins, you know, take control of that game late in the regulation, then in overtime.
Do you see this as a game that sets up, and we've got just a few minutes in the live segment, but our listeners, are on podcast, but do you see this as a game that pushes the Dolphins forward as far as maybe regaining some confidence, figuring out where they need to go, and getting this thing back on track, Kurt?
Well, I'd like to think so, because Cincinnati's a pretty good team, or they have been, but, you know, the NFL football, it's a week-to-week proposition. And that's what I think people like about it. You just never know what you're going to get. But I'd like to think that'll help them because they've got a good defense. Their offense is kind of shaky at times. But with the NFL, you never know.
IU, Minnesota, hook it up for homecoming in Bloomington on Saturday, 3:30 start, Bloomington time. Don Schulteis, you might be there. I might be there. Will the Hoosier defense be there?
I don't know. I think it's week to week and play to play sometimes, series to series, because I saw some stats on that Darius Latham, who was the big freshman recruit from up here in Indianapolis, and I think for the year he has one sack and 12 tackles, and I thought, man, you know, I know he's a freshman. I know that he's got to develop a little bit, but it seemed like very weak numbers for somebody that's starting every game on the defensive line and was as highly touted as they are. And, you know, my good friend who's a sugar daddy for the Minnesota Gophers said that they're going to be coming in with their guns blazing to Bloomington tomorrow, so I think it's going to be a tall order because even though it's homecoming, I think coming off that win that they had against Nebraska, they've got some mojo that maybe the Hoosiers don't have.
Kurt, does this game signal if the Hoosiers can hold serve, come to play, good offense, at least a strong defense, and win this game? Does this signal that the Hoosiers are a team that now can be looked at, not at the top of the Big Ten, but I'm talking about the top half of the Big Ten?
Well, I think so, because if you couple that with the games that they are supposed to win against Illinois and Purdue later on, that would give them another win to go along with the Penn State win. So that'd be four Big Ten wins. That would assure them of a 6-6 season. And anything less than that is an epic fail in a coach's third year. I'm not saying blow Wilson out the door, but with all the hype coming into this season, to be 5-6 if they don't get tomorrow's game, tomorrow's game is huge. And Minnesota coming off the win against Nebraska, although Nebraska's kind of, you know, up in the air too half the time, but tomorrow is huge. I mean, it's a homecoming game, and basically their season and the way you look at Indiana football rests in the balance with tomorrow's game.
So you're calling Coach Wilson to task right here?
Not really, because they're not. I don't think you should blow coaches out after 3 years. But by the third year, you're expected to turn it around a little bit. But you know, it would be disappointing if they couldn't win that game.
You call a lot of football games on the high school level, and you've seen the sport year in, year out. Don Schulteis says Latham disappointment as a vaunted freshman recruit. Is it his fault? Is it the people he's playing with? How do you look at a freshman coming in like that and the expectations? In football, doesn't he have to have somebody helping him on that line, putting some pressure on that offensive line to give him some opportunities?
Yeah, when a good team, when Ohio State or an Oregon or an Alabama, they plug a true freshman in there, they've got all kinds of veterans alongside him.
Yeah, but Kurt,
Indiana's awfully...
We're not dealing with Ohio State, Oregon, and Alabama. We played Navy, Indiana State, Missouri. I mean, one sack, 12 tackles? Were they double-teaming him?
I understand. There's something fundamentally with the whole defensive scheme, approach, personnel, all of the above. Yeah, that is as much hype as Latham got. I probably would expect more out of him. But I'm just saying, it's like anything else. When you have guys around you,
yeah,
that's going to be the key to some of these freshmen on the basketball team, going back to that. I mean, there's not much around those guys. They're talented, and they're going to be really good. But you know, I'd rather have talented guys that are young than guys that are young that aren't any good like they used to have. But
maybe the pressure's on Doug Mallory.
Well, that's been a big problem.
I'll tell you guys something right now. I mean, they are not firing Kevin Wilson anytime soon.
No,
he's got four more years
no.
on his contract. If anybody goes, it will be Doug Mallory.
But
I'm gonna defend Kurt just a little bit, and I do like Coach Wilson and all he's done. But you know, we are at a pivotal point. We've got a pretty solid offense. We've got a defense that is a couple players short. There's no doubt about it. But either we've got to make some changes defensively to take advantage of what we got offensively. Because listen, guys, when you have to depend on outscoring, and you know what I mean by this comment, outscoring the other team every week, man, that's just tough to do in the Big Ten.
Yeah, 47 points on most nights will give you a victory no matter where you're playing. That deal at Michigan, that was not good. You know, like Navy lit them up. They had no clue what was going on in that game. You know, Missouri, I'll cut them some slack because Missouri's doing that to everybody. But just the fundamentals, the same thing happens over and over again. I mean, Kenny, you'd know that you'd be if somebody was beating your teams by doing the same thing over and over again, the lack of tackling, the lack of pursuit angles, not getting – you know, what kills me about Indiana football, you know, they always say in sports, you know, you can't take away everything, so we're going to try to take away this or that. Not, they don't get pass rush. Like Donnie said, Blake with one sack, the rest of those guys, they don't do that, but they don't cover guys either. So they're kind of in this middle ground of defense of, oh, we're just going to react to things. And it's just, you know, Michigan guys made triple moves. Usually a good receiver will make a double move on somebody because they don't get a pass rush. Michigan guys, a Gallon was going nuts for 300 some yards because they couldn't get a pass rush on anybody.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like basketball. If the same guy keeps getting the ball and scoring, maybe it's time to make sure he doesn't get the ball and force that ball somewhere else. And look, the littlest guy on the field ate IU's lunch, dinner, supper, snack, and medicine day long.
Yeah. So
Don, I in the end, you're right. We had a vaunted recruit. He hasn't shown us the things we wanted to see, especially against some teams that maybe he should have. I do look back and say this for this IU team. Missouri was a game I thought we would win. But as the season's gone on, we found out that Missouri is a much better team than we all thought they were.
Well, yeah, I mean, Missouri, I'm sitting here looking at some stats on Latham, and he had one solo tackle and two assisted tackles at Indiana State. He had zero solo, one assisted at Navy. Bowling Green, he had one solo. Missouri had one solo and one assisted. Penn State, one assisted. And Michigan State, one solo. I mean, come on. I mean, Missouri, Penn State was decent. Michigan State's good. Michigan's good, really good probably. But there's three or four games there, and I know it's a team sport, and I don't want to get too caught up in it, but I was just raising that up to make a point that, you know, we got to get more out of that defense.
Especially, I'm even going to throw this out there, Don players. And Kurt, and you can rebut me all you want, but I don't know, other than Ohio State, maybe Wisconsin, I think that's the only two top 20 teams that we really have in the Big Ten right now. I'm not convinced Michigan. I think Michigan could be at some point. I don't think Michigan's a great team this year.
No, they got a lot of holes. Michigan State has a good defense, but they can't score on anybody. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we scored 47 points against Michigan, but gave up 63. We score 42 points against our 28 points and or we scored 42 and gave up 28 against Michigan State. And so I don't know. I just look through the scores and I'm just – it's ugly.
Yeah.
It's just ugly. The defense is ugly. And the offense, there's no doubt we can put points on. But where we need to make some improvement between now and the next couple of years is defense. And I think the clock's ticking on the two defensive – I think there's two defensive coordinators, aren't there, Kurt? Aren't they co-coordinators?
No,
there's
just one now.
Okay, then the onus is on him. And I love his dad, and I respect the hard work he's put in, but we got to get something going on the defense.
Well, it's a big game in Bloomington, homecoming. Minnesota comes to town, and it's a game that is pivotal, for IU in the Big Ten, but also in the bowl picture going forward, which I know Joe is laughing, saying, IU bowl, blah, 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 but we're a lot closer than Purdue. Real quickly, I'm going to be there. I think Don's going to be there. Maybe Kurt's going to join us in Bloomington. Probably not, but
I'll
I don't know.
There.
But before you get there, you got a big game with the Southridge Raiders.
Yeah, I got to wrap up here real quick, Coach and guys. But, yeah, Southridge and North Posey tonight at Raider Field. Southridge won a thriller against Tell City last week, came down to Tell City, going for a two-point conversion. They came up empty, and Southridge moves on. Hopefully they're not looking ahead to the game with Modern Day next week, but because they hammered North Posey earlier. But good football here, Jasper Central. That should be really good because Central puts up a lot of points, and it'll be neat to see if Jasper can keep up with them offensively.
Well, have a great Friday night. We'll let you go, Kurt. You got work to do. Don, we're going up there, and I'm really looking for IU to play well. It's homecoming. It's a big game. Boy, wouldn't it be great to see Latham and the rest of that defense rise to the occasion.
Well, I hope they prove me wrong, Coach K, and I think it's a game they've got to win, and if they want to have any shot at doing anything after the Purdue game this year, besides going back to the weight room and, you know, running stairs and that kind of thing, they have got to win that game, because if they blow it, you know, it's just not going to happen, because they're not going to upset.
A lot of pressure. What time will you be up there in Bloomington, Don?
Well, we get there about noon, 1 o'clock. We like taking the full day in Bloomington. You know, it's a 3:30 start, and so we want to try to enjoy the afternoon. The weather's supposed to be on the cool side, but nice. So, you know, everybody should look for the opportunity to go up there and support the Hoosiers, and we're going to do that.
Well, we'll all meet you up there, and I know we're in a situation where it's going to be a great day in Bloomington, a little cool, a little crisp, but perfect for football, and I assume we'll be meeting at the same spot.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Joe, we've had a great show. We've talked about a lot of different things, a little controversy here and there, but in the end, it's a big weekend for Hoosier football. What about Purdue football, Joe?
I've been so focused on volleyball, I'm not even sure who we play this week, believe it or not.
You know, Don,
I've been running
every
all over
week,
Southern Indiana getting tapes.
Every week when I bring up Purdue, unless they've won, Joe doesn't
know. They play Ohio State. They play Ohio State. They're breaking out some black helmets with the train tracks going in the center. I do remember that now, but you know, I'm going to be up that way too. So, of course, I'm going to something I feel is much more important. So,
Joe, what's the number that our listeners can text you at?
812-630-2449. Why are there hostile IU people asking for it?
I encourage all Purdue fans to text Joe and rip him, because he's supposed to be a Purdue fan, but he is the most middle of the road. I don't know what Purdue's doing this week. Oh, I don't know what they're doing. Oh, Purdue won a big game. Oh, I didn't even know they played an exhibition game the other night in basketball.
I didn't.
Unbelievable.
Hey, I'm telling you, this house has been all about volleyball this week. I've been all over the place getting taped.
People that went to IU know how to multitask. I guess people who went to Purdue don't.
Oof. Well, I guess so.
And that's this Friday, November 1st.
Before we end the show, I do want to, I know that, you know, there are other people that need to wish good luck in the area, but I only know Jasper. So Kevin Shipp and his girls cross country team is going to be competing in the state finals tomorrow, and I wanted to wish them luck on the air before we sign off here. Got a very young team,
awesome,
and should do very well.
Yeah, I like Coach Shipp. Kevin had him in class, and good young man, played basketball for a couple years. He's a good guy, real good guy, and a great family.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, I encourage everyone to get out to the game tonight versus Central early. If you come past my tailgate, I will provide a liquid refreshment for anyone that says they're listening to the Coach K and Joe show. So,
let's hope
Don,
that it's a high school game. Let's hope it's non-alcoholic, Joe.
I didn't say it was alcoholic, so. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, that's it for this week. We've put the bowl up way too high. And for Coach K, for Don Schulteis, I'm Joe Milligan, inviting you back next week. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Ubelor and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. See you next week.